We're beginning Masechta Sukkah, page Mem Dalet in Ein Yaakov. The beginning of Masechta talks about the minimum and maximum size for a sukkah. So one of the things it talks about is the minimum height of a sukkah is 10 tefachim, and so the Gemara gets into a discussion of where we know that from. So the Gemara talks about the idea that the Oroin plus the Kaporas was a total 10 tefachim tall, because the Oroin, the Pasuk says, was an amma and a half tall. We learned in Yom Rashi made the point over there that the Oroin didn't have legs, so it wasn't like there was legs plus a height of the box. Rather, you had the box sat on the floor, and it was an amma and a half tall, which appointed a mayor is 9 tefachim. Later on, the Gemara deals with what about appointed a Yehuda. And then the Gemara says the Kaporas was a tefach tall, so that makes 10 tefachim, and we find that the Shechina rested on top of the Kaporas, and then Hashem spoke to Moshe from there. So in this connection, the Gemara brings Tanya of Yosiyomer, Me'olam lo yoda Shechina l'mata me'asara. The Shechina never went down all the way below 10 tefachim onto the ground. This is where we get the expression that they've always used, l'mata me'asara tefachim, that we should see things repoil in the world. So here, the Shechina never went down. Actually, the Iyun Yaakov points out, we shouldn't really say never. When Hashem first created the world, here we're coming up to Yud Shvat now, we have the Maim of Basi Lagani, which quotes the Medrash, that Iker Shechina v'tachtonim hoisa. So yes, to begin with, before the Chatei Tzadas, the Shechina was actually here, v'tachtonim, literally the Matam Asar Tvachim. But ever since then, even when it says that Moshe brought it down, then the Gemara is saying over here that it still remained above 10 Tvachim. When we talk about the Nigla Kvod Avayev, then again it'll be down here on Earth Lamata Masar Tefachim. Anyway, so the Shechina never came down below 10 Tefachim. And Moshe and Elio, when they went up, when it says that they went up to Shemayim, they never actually went up all the way, or they remained within 10 tefachim. Because there's a different reshus. There's a reshus below 10 tefachim, and there's a reshus above 10 tefachim. We know that that's the case in Hilchas Shabbos. So here also you have as far as the Shechina, and then there's the place of people. Shenema, as the pasuk says, Shemayim, Shemayim, Hashem, Va'aretz Nasan Lebnei Adam. The heavens belong to Hashem, and the heavens for this purpose is defined as anything above 10 tefachim, and the earth he gave to people, so each one remains in its own place. So now you have all over the place in the Siddur, it talks about the idea that it says in the Medrash that there was an absolute embargo between them. You have the Moshul that the Medrash brings, that there used to be a law that people from Rome are not allowed to travel to Syria, and vice versa, and then the Ebishter says, no, I'm canceling that rule, because the Yomim you have in the Moshul over there, the king wants to marry a woman from Syria, and he says, now that Zeta is bottled by Miyamaskil, Shenema Vayered Hashem al Har Sinai. It's quoted in innumerable places in Sichas, but here the Gemara is taking the view that even with that, even though that mechitza between Oyonim and Tachtonim was broken, there still remains something. There still remains of a limitation of above and below 10 tefachim, which the Shechina doesn't appear on earth below 10 tefachim. There's places in the Chassidus, there's a mime of the Mittal Rebbe, for example, that talks about the idea that you have, what do we mean by what 10 tefachim are we talking about? So you have the Merkava, you have the way that Yechezkel and other Nevi'im pictured Hashem, so to speak, riding this chariot carried by the Chayas and the Eifanim. So that's the Asar tefachim that we're talking about. The Shechina never appears without that kind of thing. But Matt and Poet also, you have that, the Rosh Hashanah, they have the expression that every Jew saw over there what even the greatest Nevi'im didn't. So yeah. So the Gemara asks, V'lo yod Hashchina l'mata v'oksi v'yod Hashem al Harsinai. It says that Hashem came down on Harsinai. And the answer is, l'mata ma'asar, l'mayla ma'asar tefachim, means Hashem remained above 10 tefachim. There is, by the way, you have those two Rashis in Parashas Yisroi, one that talks about that Hashem came down on Har Sinai, and one where the Rebbe explains that Hashem, so to speak, bent down the heavens and put them like a sheet on top of a bed on top of Har Sinai, and then you have a different pasuk where Rashi explains differently, and there's a whole sicha where the Rebbe talks about the difference between those two perspectives and the difference between Yud Tes and Chof. One is Perek Yud Tes pasuk Chof, the other one is Perek Chof pasuk Yud Tes. But anyway, the point is that there's still the separation. What about Foxiv Omdu Ragla Bayemohu al Harazesim? You have the Pasuk that says that the time of Mochemus Gogomog, Hashem's feet will stand on Harazesim. And again, the answer is Lamaila Masar Tvachim. So after that, after Mochamas Gog and Magog comes the Giluyim of Osi Lavoi, then you don't have that limitation anymore. But the time when the Pasuk is talking about is still before that. Okay. So that takes care of that. What about the other way around? So again, the answer is L'mayim Ma'asorat Tvachim. So the question is, what about Moshe and Eliyahu? You're telling me they didn't actually go up on high. And again, the answer is L'mata Ma'asorat. Moshe remained within 10 Tvachim of the ground. Now, even within 10 Tvachim, Ma'asorat refers over here to something that he says on this in Bava Metzia, where the Gemara mentions over there that when Moshe went up to Shemayim, he didn't eat. As we know, he was on Har Sinai for 3 times 40 days, and he didn't lachem le'ochel, mayim le'shasa, vice versa, the malachim, when they came to Avram Avinu, they did eat, because lo'olam al-yishana onam minagamachim. So fine, Moshe is not more than 10 tefachim above the ground. He's within 10 tefachim, but nevertheless, he's on a higher level, and therefore he's on a level where it's already considered to that extent the reshus of the malachim, and therefore he's not going to be eating. Yeah, the Bash doesn't mean 10 fucking from the ground. So that's what we're saying. In other words, that he was lifted up, even just a couple of tefachim above the ground is already lifted up, is already lifted up into a different madrega. You know, you have the line in Kovitz Mechtovim in the back of Tillim. You have the whole long story over there involving the time of the Tzemach Tzedek when he one year he calls together a few select chassidim, and he tells them that every morning early first thing in the morning they should be saying Gantz Tillim, and the kids are the terrible Gzeira on the Jewish people, and the Mittel had told them that this is what you need to be Mevatel Gzeira. Anyway, at the end of there he says, you know, the same way as Kos Shobracha Ton Hagvah Tefach, you have to lift it up Tefach, the same way Tillim is Dovra Melach Kos Shabracha, it lifts a person up a tefach from the world. So you see that even lifting up a tefach, you're still within 10 tefachim, you're already on a different level. What? Say what again? Yeah, we're saying Vayal Moshe Ola Levitim. But we're saying he remained within 10 tefachim. Oh, Hashem actually says that he lifted him up L'mayim L'mashamayim. Okay, I mean, the Gemara is not asking on that. Maybe we could say also he lifted him up within 10 tefachim from the ground, and that's already enough to be, you're right. I mean, L'mayim L'mashamayim, I suppose, Borod, on the face of it, comes from a much higher, from much higher levels of the atmosphere. I don't know, unless Saka, we do say that maybe we mean Asara Tfachim, maybe we mean the whole Gashmistic earth and its atmosphere and everything counts as the base, and then Asara Tfachim, or Lamailam Asara Tfachim, would be within 10 Tfachim, or beyond 10 Tfachim, above that. It's a good point, I don't know. L'chora not. It seems to be saying that we're talking about within 10 tefachim or above 10 tefachim from the ground. Or again, maybe taket means from the top of the atmosphere. I don't know. Okay. What about Vaksiv Ayal Eliyahu Vasara Shemaim? It says that Eliyahu was taken up in a whirlwind Shemaim. Again, L'mata Ma'asar. Okay, but here's another one. Back to Moshe Rabbeinu. Vaksiv, the Pasuk in Iyev says, Ma'aches Pnechise, that he holds on to the face, to the surface of the throne, Parshes Olav Anonai, he spread out his cloud over him. So this is referring to, the Gemara tells us in Shabbos, that this is referring to when Moshe was up in Shemayim to receive the Torah. You have the whole thing where the Malachim are arguing against him. Hashem, what are you doing giving the Torah down on earth? T'nohod Chal Shemayim. And then Hashem says to Moshe, hold on to the Kisei HaKavod and answer them. And so the Pasuk in Iyov metaphorically is describing that. The Amar Rav Tanchum, and in fact, Rav Tanchum explains, what is this word, parshei? It's an unusual word. The Torah Tzmima likes to point out, he says, v'derech chal shoshim in Lashon Kodesh usually have 3 letters. So when you find a word in Tanakh that seems to have a 4-letter or 5-letter shoresh, then the Chachamim are generally going to darshan it as a nutriko, and as it's like a portmanteau of a few words mushed together. So here, you're not going to have none of these letters, Pei, Rei, Shin, and Zayin, can possibly be a prefix or a suffix. None of these letters function as that. So therefore, the Gemara's understanding, it's a compound word. So v'omer Rav Tanchum, Malamach Pirush Shakai Miziv Shchinaseh V'Anonai Olav, Hashem spread out from some of the glory of his Shechina and his cloud on Moshe. Parshei is short for Peras Shakai Ziv. So therefore, Hashem spread out some of his glory on Moshe and made it possible for him to answer the Malachim. Marsha refers over here to what he explains in Shabbos, which is Hashem was showing with that the person, after all, unlike a Malach, a person is a compound of Gashmias and Ruchmias. The same way, though, you're a Gashmiastic person. Therefore, the Malachim are arguing that you and other fellow Gashmiastic people like you don't deserve the Torah. I'm going to spread my cloud and my glory of my Shekhinah on you, showing them that you have a Ruchmiastic component as well. You have a component of the Kiss that covered in you, because the neshama, after all, comes from underneath the kiss that covered, and that will give you the ability to answer them. Anyway, the point is, on the face of it, if Moshe is all the way by the kiss that covered and holding on to it, that has to be l'mayla ma'asarim. And the answer is no, l'mata ma'asarim. It still means below 10 tefachim. Like Mar says, machas penekisixin, but it says he's holding on to the throne, and isn't the throne itself l'mayla ma'asarim tefachim? And the answer is no. Di'ishtar buvi ishtar buvle kiseh adasara means that Hashem stretched out the throne, Hashem lowered down the throne until the limit of asara tefachim, the nukit bay, and now Moshe is able to hold on to it. In various places in Chassidus, it talks about what the kiseh covered represents in terms of the olamos. If I remember correctly, it talks about that the kiseh covered represents olam hayitzira. I may be wrong about that. I don't remember. Whatever the case, the point is, in other words, that so Moshe is being brought up to a higher level than olam asiya, but still nowhere near atzmus mahus, which remains strictly l'mayla ma'asara in a whole different dimension. Yeah, so Hakosev mentions over here the point that, yeah, it's a different rishus, yeah. And that's, he says that that's what it means. And in other words, that's what the Gemara is saying, that it means that Hashem still remains beyond all rishus, but close to it. Right. Different world, yeah. So in other words, again, when we talk about the Olamus, Atzilus, Bria, Yitzira, Asiya, we have to remember those are not spatial worlds in the sense, you know, if you take a spaceship and you travel X number of light years, you'll reach Olam HaYitzira. Of course not. You know, the Ruchniastika worlds, all of them are present within, you know, right here, within our reality. We just can't perceive them unless we're attuned to them. So that's the Lamaila and Lamata Ma'asara Tzvachim that we're talking about. So the Asara Tzvachim on the face of it is 10 Tzvachim from the ground, or again, maybe 10 Tzvachim from the top of the atmosphere, but primarily we're talking about Ruchniastika realities over here, which, to a certain, you know, we learn about them in Chassidus, we can understand them to a certain extent intellectually, but we're not going to perceive them unless we're, okay. So the Gemara continues. So further in this connection, the Gemara discusses how do we know that the Kaporis was a Tefach Bit? Because that's what we were using to establish. If the Oren is 9 Tefachim and the Kaporis is 1, then there is your 10 Tefachim, and there we see that the Shekhinah never went below 10 Tefachim. There is also, by the way, a reason why to say that the 10 Tefachim is from the ground, because that's where the Oren is, sitting on the ground in the Mishkan, and later on in the Bais Hamikdash.
It's from the ground up.
Yeah, that was the truth. Yeah. So anyway, so Tony Rav Chanina. So Rav Chanina teaches a braisa. Kol akelim she'osam Moshe nosnen v'andhora midas okon midas rochbon. With all the other kelim that it says that Hashem told Moshe to make, the Torah gives the length and the width midas chemosan and the height, all three dimensions. Kaporas midas oko midas rochman nitna or midas kaimasa loy nitna. When it comes to the kaporas, the Torah tells us the length and the width. It's the same as the Oren itself, 2.5 by 1.5 amas. It doesn't say the height. How do we figure out what the height is? Say l'man mi pochas shebakelim. You can learn it out from the smallest of the kelim, the smallest measurement that's mentioned in connection with any of the kelim. Shenema, it says by the shulchan v'asisal v'misgeras toifach sovid, you should make for it a frame of a tefach in size all around. It's machlokas in Menachos, whether this frame was above the tabletop and it was meant to, by like, kind of to keep the lachem aponim from falling off, or was it below the tabletop and it's meant to hold the legs together, like you have often on tables, you have rails that hold one leg to the other. Whatever the case, the point is, the Pasuk mentions over there a tefach, and that's the smallest dimension that the Torah ever mentions in connection with any of the cavemen. There were things that were smaller dimensions, but it never mentions those dimensions. The smallest one that ever mentions is a tefach, so malahalan tefach, hafkan tefach, therefore we can learn from that Kaporis was a tefach thick. Agav, they point out, it may be that it was actually a tefach thick along the edges and not necessarily a tefach thick, the full thickness of it, because a slab of gold that size, 2.5 by 1.5 by 1 tefach, would contain in it more than all the gold that it says they collected for the entire Mishkan that's listed in Parashas Pekudei. So mathematically, it may be that it was made kind of like an open upside down box, like an open upside down shallow box. Anyway, the Gemara asks further. So how do we know? The Gemara says that there is something smaller that was in the Mishkan and the Beis Hamikdash, namely the tzitz. So Tanya, tzitz doma kamin tashtozav. The tzitz was like a flat golden plate. The roch of Beis Etzvos was 2 etzvos wide because it had to go on the Kohen's forehead, on the Kohen Gadol's forehead, and that's approximately the height of the forehead. Umukaf me'ozen la'ozen. It was long enough to extend from one ear to the other. The kosevol of Beis Shittin, the words Kodesh Lashem that it says in the pasuk had to be written on it, were written in two lines. Yud kei melamayla, the Kodesh Lamed melamata. Yud kei doesn't just mean, obviously, it didn't just say Yud kei. It said Yud kei vav kei. But that was written further up, and Kodesh Lamed further down. Tosfos discusses over here, first of all, that the reason why the Gemara doesn't mention all four letters is because you have a problem of Hoyges Hashem Bo'isiyosef. We know, the same way as you're not allowed to pronounce the name Yudke Vovke as written, you're not allowed to say the letters of it individually either, which is why, for example, before Baruch Shamar, we say Yudke Bevovke in other examples when we mention that shame. So Tosfos says, as far as Yudke by itself, technically you wouldn't have that issue, because even though it is a shame of Hashem, Hoyges Hashem Bo'isiyosef only applies to the name Yudke Vovke. Nevertheless, Tosfos says people are careful with all other shamus to not pronounce them either. Anyway, the Tosfos also then discusses, what do we mean when we say that the name Yudke Vovke was above and Kodesh Lamed was below? Now, the reason behind it is, the reason because of covered of Hashem's name. It wouldn't be becovered it to put something else before Hashem's name. Marsha points out, now we have obviously throughout the Torah, we have things before Hashem's name. In fact, you have a Mishnah in Yadayim where there was an argument, one of the arguments between the Tzedukim and the Prushim, meaning the Chachamim over there, was just that, where Tzedukim says to the Chachamim, look at this, in a get, you write at the top, you write that this get is being written in the year of Pliny the king, and at the bottom you write Kedas Moshe v'Yisrael, so isn't it disrespectful to put a Goyish king above Moshe? And then Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, whoever it was, I don't remember, answers him back. You know what? In the Torah we have Vayom Paroi Mi Hashem, and yet there's no problem with that because that's the style. So the difference is over here. Marsha says the difference is that on the tzitz it only said the words Kodesh Lashem. Mela, everywhere else you have words before and after Hashem's name. Okay, that's how else are you going to write it? But here, where you have only these two words, then it's not respectful to have something written directly before Hashem's name, and therefore they have to write it in two lines. So Tosfos points out it can't be that it means literally that the name Yudke Vovke is centered above the word Kodesh Lamed, because then it wouldn't read properly. You don't read from bottom to top, you read from top to bottom. So therefore, so Tosfos learns that it means there's Kodesh Lamed over here and Hashem over here, so it's on the higher line, but it's still, you can still read it like that. And there's different other opinions among Rishonim how exactly it was arranged in such a way that you'll have, that the Yudke Vovke will be on top, and it can still be read in a row with the words Kodesh Lashem, or with the words Kodesh Lamed. Anyway, the Omer Rabbi Eliezer Rabbi Yossi, Anira Isid Beroimi. However, Rabbi Eliezer Rabbi Yossi says, I saw that sits in Rome, the Kosovol of Kodesh Lashem, the Shita Achas, and it actually said in it Kodesh Lashem all on one line. So he says, in other words, and you see from that's how it's supposed to be written. The Gemara tells us in Ne'ilah a whole story where there was a Gzeira against Yidden, and Rabbi Shimon ben Yochoy and Rabbi Eliezer Rabbi Yossi traveled to Rome to be Mevatel the Gzeira, and the Kitzer, the way that Hashem helped them was a shed came and took over the emperor. His daughter, and she became crazy, and then she's calling out for them, and they came and healed her, and then the emperor was so overjoyed, he says, you can go into the treasury and take whatever you want, and they found the copy of the Gzeira there and tore it up. But while they were there, they got to see various kelim of the Beis Hamikdash, and one of them, Rabbi Eliezer Rabbi Yossi, says that he saw the tzitz. This would have been like 70 or 80 years after the Churban. You have, in fact, the Rambam brings in this connection. Given that we have Rabbi Eliezer Rabbi Yossi saying that, we have to say it must be kosher that way. And so the Rambam brings in Hilchos Klei HaMikdash, that generally they would write it on two lines, but sometimes they made it on one line, and that would also be kosher. And there's a sicha where the Rebbe discusses the ins and outs of that, that in particular,
the why didn't the Chachamim accept Rabbi Yehuda Rabbi Yossi's Atavirus, an eyewitness testimony that he sees the tzitz over there? Because they say that's not necessarily the tzitz that the Kohen Gadol used. It may have been like an imitation that they made in order that the Goyim don't take the real one when they're sacking the Beis Hamikdash. Meanwhile, though, it would have to be that in order for the Goyim to be fooled, it would have to be that occasionally the Kohen Gadol really did wear a tzitz that had it all on one line, and therefore that justifies the Rambam writing that sometimes it was written on one line.
By the way, I just heard that the Prophet Israeli.
That's right. Interesting. Okay. Okay. A lot of them. Let's first deal with getting them to return all the hostages. David should help them, and then after that, you know. I hear. Okay. I know he's talking about the. I know he's talking about the things from the Vatican that the other cave of the Bismikdash. Okay. I mean, David should help, but you know, if they're going to be doing deals to get things returned, first let him arrange for to get back all the hostages safely, and then yeah.
He just wanted to.
I understand. I hear. Okay. Interesting. All right. Anyway, the point is, the Gemara says, so you see that tzitz was only 2 etzvos wide, so why do we have to assume that we learn the kaporis for the thickness of the kaporis from the size of that rim around the shulchan, rather than saying that we learn from the tzitz? And the Gemara answers because the tzitz is not really a keli, it's a tachshit, it's a different kind of thing. Okay. So then the Gemara deals with afterwards, the Gemara goes on to deal with what about according to Rav Yehuda, who says that the Amos of Kalim were smaller and therefore the Arden was only 7.5 tefachim tall. According to him, how do you learn the whole concept that a sukkah is 10 tefachim tall? But in the course of that, the Gemara also deals with that, another question is that the faces of the kruvim were 1 tefach in size. So the Gemara says, well, my kruv, why are these creatures that are on top of that are depicted on top of the kaporis, why are they called kruvim? Amar Rav Abahu, kiravya. The word kruv is related to the word kiravya, so the kof is a prefix, and ravya means a child. Shekem Rebavel, currently in Nukar Ravya, in Bavel, in Aramaic, a child is called ravya. So kiravya means that the kruvim were made to look like children. So therefore, and a child's face is small, so it's only the size of a tefach, so therefore that's the size of the faces on the kruvim, the Gemara says. So, omale abaya, elame ata, or, a different gear, say, Yad Yosef brings it, a papa asks abaya, elame ata, dechtiv, what about, so you're telling me that a kruv has the face of a child, but you have in Yechezkel, now the first time Yechezkel sees the Merkava twice, in Perek Aleph and in Perek Yod of his Sefer. The first time is the more familiar one because we read it as the after of the first day Shavuos. He describes that the kruvim have 4 faces: pnei shur, pnei nesher, pnei aryeh, and pnei odem. The second time, then he sees the kruvim again in Perek Yud, and there are slight differences. One of the differences is that he sees instead of the pnei shur, there's a pnei kruv. Rashi brings over there from a medrash that Yechezkel says a pnei shur, the face of an ox, is going to be a constant reminder of the chetah egel, and therefore Hashem, that's the Gemara and Chagiga actually, and therefore Hashem transformed it instead into a kruv. Now, if you're telling me that the kruvim have human faces, so then the pasuk says pnei echad pnei kruv, pnei sheni pnei adam, haynu kruv, haynu adam. If the kruvim have human faces, then the pnei kruv and the pnei adam are the same thing. So what's the difference? And the answer is api rabbi, viva api zutri. You have the large face of an adult and the small face of a child. So that's what the kruvim have. And from here is where we get the expression. You have arich anpin and zer anpin is based on this gemara over here. Further on in the parak, the Gemara deals with the Mishnah says sukkah yishana. When you have an old sukkah, that is as the Mishnah goes on to say, where it was made more than 30 days before sukkah, and it wasn't made l'shem sukkah. Beshamay posan of a silo machshirin. So Beshamay says that the sukkah is possible unless you pick up and put down the schach l'shem schach, and the silo says it's kosher. So the Gemara says, my time of the Beshamay. Why does Beshamay hold that such a sukkah should be possible? And because omakra paga sukkah shivas yomim l'shem. The pasuk says a yom tov of sukkah is 7 days for Hashem, and that means, since it says Hashem, means sukkah hasui l'shem chag ba'inan, it has to be that the sukkah was made strictly for the command of Hashem, so therefore for the yom tov. Uvesilol, what does Vesilol answer to that? They say, so if it was done within 30 days of the Yom Tov, since, as the Gemara talks about in other places, within 30 days before Yom Tov is when you're supposed to be learning Hilchos HaChag, so then it can be considered that it was made L'shem Sukkah. But when it was more than 30 days before that, then Beis Shammai says that no. Or Beis Hillel, what does Beis Hillel answer to that? They say, Ahum Ibor L'chad Rav Sheshes. We need that pasuk to teach us what Rav Sheshes says. Do'am Rav Sheshes, Meshum Rav Akiva, Minayin La'atzi Sukkah, Sha'asurim Kol Shiva. How do we know that the wood and other materials that we use to build the Sukkah are also Bahana all 7 days? Meaning, even if the Sukkah falls down, or even if you have extra pieces that you don't need for the Sukkah, and what does Lashem mean? Betanya, Rabbi Yehuda ben Maseir Omer, Keshem Shachal, Shem Shamayim, Al Chagiga, just that when it says Chag HaSukkos, the word Chag doesn't just mean the Yom Tov, it means the Korban Chagiga of Sukkos. So the same way as Keshem Shachal, Shem Shamayim, Al Chagiga, just as Hashem's name is on the Chagiga, once you've designated an animal for your Korban Chagiga, you can't use it for whatever purposes you want. Kach, Chal, Shem Shamayim, Al Sukkah, so also the name of Hashem is on the Sukkah, and it's reserved for the use of sukkahs, shenem achag asukkahs shivas yam lashem, machag lashem af sukkah lashem. Now, Tosfos points out, in fact, if it hadn't been for the word chagiga, then yes, we would have said, like this shamai, that means the sukkah has to be made l'shem chag, but since we have the word chag over there, then that makes him say that it means that the pasuk is comparing the sukkah to the chagiga, but not to say that the sukkah has to be built l'shem mitzvah sukkah. In fact, it does not. The halacha is like the hillel, as it usually is, and therefore it can be built even 30 days in advance, and you don't have to pick up the sach. However, if you do have, if it was built the shaloi l'shem sukkah, then yeah, you would have to, then you would have to. Yeah. Okay. Further on in the parak, it's dealing in detail with the dinim of sach. The Gemara brings in that connection from a Mishnah that says that if you have, for example, straw that used to have grain in it, and now you have some of the straw with a little bit of the grain still stuck to it, or you have, for example, a cluster of grapes where most of the grapes have been taken off, and you still have a little bit. So you have you have a concept in halacha called yodas. Mainly the main place where the Gemara talks about this is in Chulin. You have a concept, for example, that if a food is makabel tumah, then you have a certain amount of the stem or whatever that's attached to it is also makabel tumah and transmits tumah along with it. The Gemara in Chulin learns it out from Sukkim. So now the Gemara deals with you have, for example, a stalk of grain that you took it and you threshed it. And you still have a little bit of a yad attached to the stalk of grain. That yad is not makabel tumah and doesn't transmit tumah. So usually we would say that's not makabel tumah anymore, because at that point, by doing that, you've shown you don't intend to use it as a yad anymore. You just want to get the grain out of it and throw it away. However, the Gemara points out that there are some times when even so, it will still be makabel tumah, because the Gemara says shiruyin lahofchan be'eser, because you still want to have, until you do the threshing, that's what it is, until you do the threshing, you want that yad to still be attached to it. You're going to thresh it and you're going to remove it anyway. The point is, because it makes it easier to handle it with an eser. An eser is like a pitchfork or something like that, that they use. How do you winnow grain, after all? How do you thresh and winnow grain? You throw it up into the air, that's the malacha of Zoda, and the wind, either you have a natural wind or you fan it with a fan or whatever, and the wind carries away the shells, and then you're left with a pile of clean grain. So when you have these yodas still attached to the stalk of grain, it makes it easier to pick it up with an esser, so it doesn't fall through the holes or between the tines or whatever of the pitchfork. So now, having mentioned an esser, the Gemara brings a piece of agadta about that. Why is the tefillah of tzaddikim compared to an eser, where you have the pasuk by Yetar Yitzchak LaHashem, by Yosu LaHashem? You have other examples from the Rashi, doesn't bring other examples, but we have, for example, in last week's parasha, we have a few times by Yetar LaHashem that Moshe davens to Hashem. So the Gemara is understanding. Now, in the simple sense, you would say that they're not really related. The word asira, the word by Yetar and by Yosu and so forth, when it comes to tefillah, is related, Rashi explains, to a word that means a lot of them. Whereas over here, the esser would be the name of a farming tool, a pitchfork. But the Gemara is understanding that there is a connection between them. So what's the connection? Loi malach, it comes to teach you. Ma esser zem hapach as a truob gurdon mimokim mimokim. Just like an esser is used to turn over the grain in the harvest in the granary from one place to another, because that's what you do with it. You take the, you pick up a pile of grain with it, and when you turn it over and move it someplace else. Af tefilos and shal tzaddikim, the same way you have the tefilah of tzaddikim, ma pechas midosef shal hakadosh baruch hu mimidas rachzonus lemidas rachmanus. They turn over Hashem's midas from anger. Actually, in the printed Gemara, you actually have the, an even stronger word, not rachzonus, but achzorius. Literally means cruelty. A hard thing to say about Hashem, but anyway, it transforms that from that midas rachmanus to a midah of rachmanus. So that's the what the tefillah of tzaddikim is able to accomplish. Marsha mentions in where this Gemara is brought in Yevamos as well. He makes a point over there, you know, with the psukim that Rashi is quoting, where we see that it's compared to an Esther in connection with Yitzchak and Rivka. It's not that Hashem was angry with them, let alone cruel to them, Chas v'Shalom, the fact that they didn't have children for 20 years. It's Hashem wanted their tefillah. But the fact is, Yitzchak himself, after all, represents Midas HaGvura, and therefore Hashem was acting towards him and to Rivka with a Midah of Gvura. So then the result is, though, that their tefillahs were able to transform that Midah of Gvura and turn it over into a gvura, into a chesed, like we're saying over here, that the pitchfork turns over the grain and turns it over from one place and from one position to the other. Okay, Hayoshin Perek Sheni. So the second parak continues dealing with dinim of the sukkah. The Mishnah says, "Ha'oisa sukkosa b'rosh ha'gola or b'rosh ha'sfina." If a person makes a sukkah on top of a wagon or on top of a boat, Sheda, then it's kosher, and the Mishnah goes on to say you could even use it on Yom Tov. This, that you can make a sukkah on top of a wagon, is how we have the whole concept of sukkah mobiles, after all. Anyway, so the Gemara says, Mani masmisin Reb Akiva. Now, who would our Mishnah be like when it says that you can make a sukkah on a boat, would be according to Reb Akiva? Tanya, Reb Gamliel actually holds that a sukkah on a boat, on the deck of a boat, would be possible. And Maisa Reb Gamliel, Reb Akiva showed Boin Vesfina. It happened once that Reb Gamliel and Reb Akiva were traveling on a boat, and it was Sukkot time. Now, this may be later on in the Masechta. We have the story where they were with two other Chachamim, and they only had one lulav and Esther between them that belonged to Reb Gamliel, and it was giving each one Matana Amanas Lahasu, and they're giving it to the next one. So maybe this is the same story, and just the Gemara is not mentioning the other Chachamim because it's not relevant to the story. Or maybe there was a different time when only Reb Gamliel and Reb Akiva were on a boat. Anyway, Amar Reb Akiva v'asa sukkah b'resh ha'sfina. So Reb Akiva went and made a sukkah on top of the boat. L'macha noshva ruach v'akarata. Next day, a wind came and blew it down. Amar Reb Gamliel, Akiva, hechen sukkasa. So Reb Gamliel says to him, Akiva, where's your sukkah? It sounds like a very funny, almost sarcastic way of saying a little bit below the belt, kind of. Habboina brings over here that there's a metaphor behind it, that the sukkah, after all, represents a diras are, in which we realize that we're only temporarily in this world. So therefore, Sir Gamliel was saying that, look, the Gemara goes on to explain what's the underlying machloikas is like this. Winds on sea are generally stronger than winds on land. What you would have, a ruach mitsuya on land is generally weaker than one at sea. So now, if you can build a sukkah on a boat strong enough to stand in a ruach mitsuya of the sea, sure, Reb Gamliel won't have a problem with that. His problem is, Reb Akiva's sukkah was strong enough for a ruach mitsuya on land, but not enough for a ruach mitsuya on sea. So, and that's why it blew over. So now Reb Gamliel is telling him over here that, look, if you have, it's not even a diras are, in other words, like, you should realize the whole, a person's whole life in this world is sometimes a joke. So that's why he's almost like joking to Reb Akiva, hechem sukoscha, like, you know, a person can take a lesson from that, how insubstantial this world and the diras are that a person lives in it is. Anyway, but again, the Gemara explains that Reb Akiva would say that's good enough, even if it's only strong enough to withstand a land ruach mitzuya, even though it's not strong enough to stand to withstand the sea ruach mitzuya. As long as it's standing, then you can still be yotzei. When it blows, Metsuya, Metsuya means regular. So you have a typical, you have a normal wind on land. You have a normal wind on land, which would be a couple of miles per hour. And then at sea, you have strong, you have much stronger ones because there's no mountains to block it. The boat itself is moving and that creates a draft, et cetera. So therefore, you're going to, you, if you're going to build a sukkah on a ship, it has to be a lot stronger than it would be on land. Rabbi Akiva holds it doesn't matter. You can build it the same strength as you would on land. As long as it stands good. If it blows over, okay, it blows over. You can't help it. Whereas Rambam Gamliel would hold that, no, it's possible to begin with unless you build it strong enough to actually withstand a, the normal sea wind. Okay. Yom Yom Mashiach HaGo'ola. Zayin Shvat. The Rambam tells us that Melech HaMashiach is going to be from Beis David and from Zerah Shloim. So what's the point of that? Why does he have to be descended from David and from Shloim? So base David, because David is the founder of the whole kingship, as the Rambam earlier says in the Halachas, that once David was anointed, then he was Zoyche in the crown of kingship for himself and his descendants for all time. As far as what does it mean that Mashiach is Mizera Shloime, the Pnimis Yonim is like this. What was the situation like in Shloime's times? It was a me'ein of the Gola Mitzvah Shloime. In his time, there was complete peace, which is why he's called Shloime, and as there's going to be when Mashiach comes. And the reason is because Shloime had the ultimate of Chochmah, Vayachkam Mikola Adam. So that way, so he was mevatel, so all the chochmas of all the goyim were completely bottled relative to chochmas shloim, relative to shloim's chochma. Therefore, he didn't even need a war to overpower them. They themselves realized how much of a nothing they are relative to shloim. So this is the me'ein of the complete shalom that will be la'asid la'boy, and that is relevant to the kingship, and that's why the Rambam makes a point of saying that Mashiach has to be descended from shloim. We were talking about halachas of kiddush. We started talking about last time that you are allowed to eat something before musaf. You're allowed to make kiddush and then eat something before musaf. But that would be, you can eat no more than a kibetza of, you have to make kiddush, of course, and then you can eat no more than a kibetza of bread. As far as fruit, you can eat even a lot of. You have to first make kiddush and drink either maloy lugma plus another revius of wine. For that purpose, we'll consider the revius to be kiddush makam soda. Or you drink a revius and you eat a kazayis of chameshes mine dagon, and that counts as makam soda. And then afterwards, you can eat your fruit. Okay, another din as far as the sodas of Shabbos. You have to eat three meals on Shabbos. In each soda, you're supposed to eat bread. Even shalosh sodas, you should eat bread. And therefore, you'd have to eat a kibetza because you're washing and making a bracha. So better, a person shouldn't fill himself up by shachris so he can fulfill that. If he partially can't eat bread, then he should at least eat mezonos or something else. And if not, then at least he should eat things like bus of the dogim, which at least go along with bread. Or at least, if nothing else, he should eat cooked fruit. So the ma'isa on minhag is we're not particularly nizer in that. Although it says in Hayom Yom that on minhag is we don't make a point to eat bread because it says Hayom Loi. However, we do have to eat something as a Yehi Chelki Ma'uchli Sholosh Sodas. Ma'isa, I don't know that you see that. I don't know that you see most of Anash are so careful with that either. We're Yotze with Divrei Torah as is brought in the Zohar that you can do that in a pinch.
Why
cooked food regularly? So actually, the Alter Rebbe, so he says over here, the Alter Rebbe doesn't mention the point of cooked food. Apparently, the idea is because cooked is at least more of a chosh of a meal than just plain food. Anyway, the actual time, the Shalosh Shodos would be any time from Mincha Gdolah and on for 6.5 hours in the day.